This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone, with a piece from 2014, which many people felt was the worst time ever, what with beheadings by ISIS and Ebola in Africa. We're re-airing it because so much has changed. Or maybe because not much has changed. The truth is, we have experienced a strong strain of nihilism throughout the third millennium. So we'll be spending this next segment staring into the abyss and pondering why nihilism is so trendy now and whether this really is something new. This all came up when Jad Abumrad, host of Radiolab, he works down the hall, told me about what happened to his brother-in-law, Eugene Thatcher. He's an author and professor of philosophy who recently explored nihilism in the genres of horror and black metal music.
In fact, probably more people have worn my book than have read it, actually.
That's Eugene. Here's Jad.
Okay, so basically, you know the story. Eugene writes a book, gives it an evocative title. Suddenly that book becomes a painting. Suddenly that painting becomes a t-shirt. And then suddenly one half of the highest grossing tour of all times is wearing it on his back.
The cover of Eugene's book, In the Dust of This Planet, was emblazoned on Jay-Z's jacket in the trailer for his and Beyoncé's recent tour. Yep, Eugene's apocalyptic title was accessorized.
I thought, okay, let me actually think about this in a deep way. The joke in my family is that Eugene writes books for no one. Suddenly, is he now not just writing books for no one anymore, but he has somehow become a conduit. He's channeling something that we're all in a kind of like underground subterranean way, that way that pop culture operates. We're all feeling. Does this represent something beyond simple, mere appropriation? To which you would say what?
I would say yes.
You would say yes.
What I would argue with is the part that you haven't asked.
Which is?
Is this unique to this moment?
Ah.
To that, I would say no.
At a certain moment, a culture discovers that its most esteemed values are for nothing. Nihilism is that moment where you have the rug pulled out from under you and nothing takes its place.
Friedrich Nietzsche, anticipating the coming crisis of faith in the mid-19th century, rocked by Darwin's scientific breakthroughs in the Industrial Revolution, famously declared,
"God is dead, and God remains dead because we have killed him. How shall we, the murderers of all murderers, comfort ourselves?"
But in fact, he embraced the void and urged us to reinvent reality for ourselves.
"Only now are you going your way to greatness. Peak and abyss, they are now joined together. For all things are baptized in a well of eternity and lie beyond good and evil."
So he would say, embrace this nothingness and then breathe out something new and flowery and beautiful?
This is what he hoped. And there's an alarming sort of vigor and enthusiasm in his late writings, you know. But Nietzsche, of course, also had a mental breakdown and was mute the last 10 years of his life. So,
Why did you name your book In the Dust of the Planet?
To be honest, I had just done a body of work that was very much straight up philosophy. And that world, it's a very different world. And I just wanted to have a title that was more evocative. And that was just more evocative. I mean,
it's stylish, man.
Well, I don't know. Jad had to really convince me on that. I'm still not convinced. I mean, we live in a culture of pervasive pandemic decontextualization. It's just, it looks like a cool phrase to go on a t-shirt to put on a goth girl in some photo shoot.
And why is it cool?
It's cool because some publicist
decided.
The idea that works is this pop nihilism. But that's not what's in the book.
What's the pop nihilism again?
The pop nihilism is using the fact that I don't believe in anything as a smokescreen for completely selfish activity. And the philosophies I'm talking about are talking about the exact opposite of that.
I think it means, look at me. I am staring down the abyss. I am so above the common man who's scared of death.
I am brave.
That I can wear it on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would go with that. I think that that is nothing more than a posture, and that's why it's in pop culture, because that's what pop culture is.
Do you feel like in the culture at large, we might all be having more and more days of true pessimism, and maybe even enjoying our own limits?
Definitely a lot more media out there, and we know a lot more about what's going on in the world, so you can draw conclusions from that. When I take this bottle and go recycle it, I like know now that it probably just goes into the trash or into a big floating island of plastic in the ocean. You know, does that change the way I behave then? I mean, that's sort of a thing that each individual person deals with.
In which case, why do you bother?
Why do we bother? I mean, I'm reminded of the opening of Boccaccio's Decameron as a group of people beset by the Black Plague. And what you see almost down the line in plague literature is two responses to the plague, which basically meant, you know, the end of the world. You either had people that would hole up in churches, hold vigils, and pray, or you had people getting drunk in the streets and just partying and going crazy. Post 9/11, do we not have that kind of situation now of like religious fanaticism and this badass, you know, in front of the apocalypse kind of thing?
So Jad went off to explore the present to learn whether this is, in fact, a uniquely nihilistic moment. We'll link to that Radiolab piece. And we went back to the past for an answer to the same question. So let's start in the present, the current drumbeat of bad news. Here's Jad's montage.
Video showing the beheading of a second American journalist has now been verified.
Disease experts say this is turning into one of the longest, deadliest outbreaks ever.
The girls were gang raped and strangled.
Once again, it is mostly children we are seeing brought into this hospital.
ISIS, Ebola, mayhem. And a recent UN Commission report tells us to prepare for global warming. It's too late to stop it. Meanwhile, Hollywood gushes extinction tropes. Why is The Walking Dead the most popular TV drama for the cherished 18 to 49 demographic? Perhaps because zombies are the ultimate nihilists? They are, after all, the apotheosis of pointlessness, shambling aimlessly in, shall I say it, in the dust of this planet, eating the brains and sucking the souls of the living, reduced like the zombies to wandering and foraging. Season 5 debuts October 12th. Cable channel AMC is creating a spin-off. This seems as good a time as any for a quick taxonomy of nihilism. There's existential nihilism, the belief that life is meaningless, political nihilism, the belief that political systems are pointless and should be overthrown. Then there's ethical and moral nihilism, you can probably work that one out, and epistemological nihilism, the belief that you can know nothing. And finally, ontological nihilism, the belief that nothing is real, so there's nothing to know. In The Matrix, Agent Smith embodies them all.
You believe you're fighting for something, for more than your survival? Can you tell me what it is? Do you even know? Is it freedom or truth? Perhaps peace? Could it be for love? Illusions, Mr. Anderson, vagaries of perception. Temporary constructs of a feeble human intellect trying desperately to justify an existence that is without meaning or purpose.
The moral nihilist finds its fullest expression in Rorschach, a killer of killers in the comic book series Watchmen. This installment of his story is called The Abyss Gazes Also. That's a nod to Nietzsche's warning to beware that when fighting monsters, you yourself do not become a monster, for when you gaze long into the abyss gazes also into you.
Streets stank of fire. The void breathed hard on my heart, turning its illusions to ice, shattering them. Was reborn then, free to scrawl own design on this morally blank world. Was Rorschach. Does that answer your questions, Doctor?
That was in the 80s. The 70s, what with the Vietnam War, Watergate, a listless economy, rampant crime, and streets steeped in the sour funk left by the spoiled ardor of the 60s, was a prime decade for nihilism, and punk was its medium. Iggy Pop, Sid Vicious, Johnny Rotten, Richard Hell, and the Voidoids. I belong to the blank generation, and I can take it or leave it each time. Well, I belong to the generation, but I can take it or leave it each time. Now that was a far cry from the ecstatic nihilism of the late 50s and early 60s, which was a rebuke to the stifling conformity of the Eisenhower era and a finger flung at the likely prospect of nuclear annihilation. In 1959, Allen Ginsberg said that America was having a nervous breakdown, inciting exaltation, despair, prophecy, strain, suicide, and public gaiety among the poets. He published Howl in 1956.
Visions, omens, hallucinations, miracles, ecstasies, gone down the American River. Dreams, adorations, illuminations, religions, the whole boatload of sensitive bullshit.
Moving further back into the post-war era, existentialism, which is pretty much existential nihilism, flowers. The word was coined in France, but the idea begins with early 19th century philosopher Soren Kierkegaard, who argued that each individual is responsible for giving his or her life meaning. The French variant was advanced by Jean-Paul Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir, and Albert Camus amid the disgrace of the intellectual establishment. The climate of cynicism and despair also gave rise to the theater of the absurd. Sartre wasn't an absurdist, but he did write fiction, like Nausea.
Here we all are, all of us, eating and drinking to preserve our precious existence. And there's nothing. Nothing, absolutely no reason for existing.
But for me, the nihilist movement Nonpareil was the one that sprang to life in a Zurich nightclub called Café Voltaire after the First World War, which makes sense because of the unmatched enormity and pointlessness of that war. Nihilism thrived in every sphere and spawned a kind of performance art philosophy called Dada. One of its founders, Tristan Tzara, recommended cutting up a newspaper article into words and phrases, throwing them into a bag, and then randomly reassembling them into poetry. He said Dada did not signify in art, but a disgust with the, quote, magnificence of philosophers. What good did their theories do us, he asked. We are, we argue, we dispute, we get excited. All the rest is sauce.
You don't think this says anything about now?
Now, Chad was really resistant to the idea that today's tendency towards nihilism is pretty much the same as all the others, at least in its general contours. If that. I mean, these days a movement is co-opted before it even gets off the ground. I argued that if, as some suggest, faith is part of our wiring, so is nihilism. Actually, maybe I was a little over-emphatic. Didn't you go through a period when you didn't think anything was real? When I was like 8, I would look at everything around me and think it was just a backdrop. Take my hand sometimes and I would drag it along the sidewalk till I made it bleed.
Really?
To see if it felt more real.
Huh.
I think at some point any intelligent person questions the truth of everything that's around them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The cultural argument I would make is that there's a nowness to this particular flavor of it because if you just turn on the news, you will see an endless stream of misery that is not just depressing, which it is, it's greater than anything I've ever experienced in my childhood.
I want to pull up here on the computer something that occurred after a time of enormous disorder after World War I, the manifesto of Tristan Tzara.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, everything one looks at is false. If I shout ideal, 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 knowledge, 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 boom, 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 I have given a pretty faithful version of progress law, morality, and all the other fine qualities that various highly intelligent men have discussed in so many books. Only to conclude that after all, everyone dances to his own personal boom, boom, and that the writer is entitled to his boom, boom.
This is so great.
Dada. Abolition of logic, which is the dance of those impotent to create. Dada, abolition of memory. Dada, abolition of archaeology. Dada, abolition of prophets. Dada, abolition of the future.
That is incredible. It's so full of spirit and vigor that it almost contradicts its negation.
It is dropping the heavy, blood-soaked mantle of the war and the lies that were told to all the people who were sent in to fight that pointless war. All of the pictures of trench warfare were suppressed until after, and hence you had what was called the lost generation. A lost generation is ripe for nihilism, an active and positive embrace of what seems to be the only kind of truth, which is that there isn't one.
The cycle that we're in now, I mean, it doesn't feel positive in a way.
I get that. But Camus said that accepting the absurdity of everything around us is just one step. It should not become a dead end. It arouses a revolt that can become fruitful. Hey, did you know that Nietzsche wrote music? He wrote this. Apparently, the first time his good friend Richard Wagner heard one of his compositions, he ran out of the room screaming with laughter. Brutal. Okay, so where were we? We touched on Nietzsche, mentioned Kierkegaard. I'm going to skip over really important people like Heidegger and Schopenhauer, the Russian anarchist Bakunin, and the Russian novelist Turgenev, who popularized the word nihilism in his novel Fathers and Children. Now I'm looking for household names. Some say Hamlet was a nihilist because he called man a quintessence of dust. I think he was just depressed. But Shakespeare really knew how to build an existential nihilist when he wanted to.
Out. Out, brief candle.
Life is but a walking shadow.
A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage.
And then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot. It's full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
The hour, this meaningless hour, is drawing to its inevitable end, as are we all, so I'll rush back to the Greeks. Epicurus really fits my premise. He lived in a chaotic time, right after the death of Alexander the Great and during the subsequent collapse of Hellenism. He was, in a sense, the Alfred E. Newman. Epicureans sought to reach a state of being called ataraxia, that is, utterly free of care. The world was created by chance. The gods, if they exist, don't care about us. Love and politics are not worth the trouble. As for death, he said, accustom yourself to believe that death is nothing to us, for good and evil imply awareness, and death is the privation of all awareness. Therefore, a right understanding that death is nothing to us makes the mortality of life enjoyable, not by adding to life an unlimited time, but by taking away the yearning after immortality. In other words, forget about it. But if Dada is my favorite expression of nihilism, this last one is definitely runner-up. So I'm going to bring back Chad and share.
Go ahead. Eat your food and be happy. Drink your wine and be cheerful. It's all right with God. Always look happy and cheerful. Enjoy life with the one you love as long as you live the useless life that God has given you in this world. Enjoy every useless day of it, because that is all you will get for all your trouble.
Who is that?
That's Ecclesiastes.
Oh, really? That's nihilism in a place I wouldn't have expected.
So, I submit that as my quad erat demonstrandum.
Oh, is it your contention that this means nihilism is a sort of a hum that goes through all times and not anything specific to this time?
Right. We can't escape the fact of our own death.
Am I supposed to say something now? Am I supposed to argue with you? I suddenly am persuaded.
Whoever's talking, I just agree.
Should I argue with you?
Sure.
It seems to me that we're all having those thoughts a little bit more, and our responses to those thoughts are different now than they ever have been. You can do any number of responses. You can decide to live a great life and have yoga and grow zucchini, or you can decide, F it, and, you know, just be a hedonist. But there is some way in which we're all responding in a way that just is like a kind of a shrug, like, forget it. It just seems to me, when I think about the ways in which people are thinking about climate change, I think about, it doesn't seem, maybe I'm just depressed, Brooke. Is that what I'm just saying to you?
You have two small kids. I just don't think you have enough sleep.
It could be.
I think a true nihilist has to have a lot of energy.
Yeah, that is true.
As I went through my exploration of it, you know, you have Camus who says that the best response is to rebel. Rebel against death. Create life on your own terms. Build it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And one way or another, we do. Sometimes we don't live a very conscious life, but we're living a life. I just think that this time, if anything, we have just grown vaguely uncomfortable in this world that seems so chaotic, but in our lives barely touches us. Essentially, we're taking in the world through the media. So it may feel more deadening, mm-hmm. but it's less intense. If you ever had to confront it because the conditions of your life have just crumbled to dust and your beliefs can no longer be sustained, I bet you'd have more energy for it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, I think I'm with you on that one. There's a sort of a seduction to the idea of nihilism because in one version of it, it can be an energetic, strong, well, it's like revolution. It's like saying no to something, and there's something very powerful and intoxicating about that. But then there's different kind of nihilism that just goes, it's a sigh nihilism versus a rah nihilism. And I guess that in an ambient sense is the nihilism that I smell in the air.
I wonder if that's what you'd call it, though. I think what you're sensing is actually apathy.
Yeah, that's another word for it.
Well, that's cheerful.
You want to get a beer?
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, Michael Loewinger, and Leah Fetter. We had more help from Monique Laborde, John Hanrahan, and Sarah Chadwick Gibson. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Terrence Bernardo.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter's WNYC's vice president for news. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Do you see that on the next page?
Oh, no.
Happy
New Year.
Let me try that again. 1, 2, 3. Happy
New Year.
Are you deliberately being later than me? Okay, you start it first, then I'll try
it. Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year!
Wow, it really sounds stilted. Faster. 3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year!
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.